Welcome to the Boss Lady Podcast. Whether you're an entrepreneur climbing the corporate ladder or a work-from-home parent, you are a boss. If you desire to make your life extraordinary, to reach and exceed your personal and professional goals, and learn from other strong leaders, then the Boss Lady Podcast is for you. As an entrepreneur, mother, wife, and former CEO, I share lessons and stories of both personal and professional successes and failures. Join me along with a diverse list of guests as we break down strategies, tools, and techniques that will enhance your career and your life. Together, we will embrace, empower, and educate each other. I am Teresa Rand, and this is the Boss Lady Podcast. Welcome to the Boss Lady Podcast. As you just heard in the introduction, this is a great podcast if you are a woman growing in your career or, quite frankly, life, which we all are. So I'm Teresa Rand, and I founded the Boss Lady Podcast during the pandemic. Looking for things to do, had always talked about starting a podcast and thought that would be a good time to do it. So here we are almost 3 years later. I've had some fabulous guests, and today is no different. Your mindset. That's the conversation that we're having today with Lindsay Briner. And it's so fascinating. If you've listened to the first few minutes, you're going to want to listen to the last few minutes. But I wanted to take a moment to remind you that we are in a contest where you can win, for you or a friend, a virtual Boss Lady membership. All you have to do is know the magic word of the week and post that in either Teresa Rand Facebook, Teresa Rand Consulting Facebook page, or the Boss Lady Community Facebook page. So this week's word is none other than mindset. Mindset. That's exactly what Lindsay and I are talking about this week. And it is imperative that you learn about setting your mind in the right place so you can reach all the dreams and goals that you've set forth for your upcoming 2024 year. So post the word mindset in Teresa Rand Consulting Facebook page or the Boss Lady Community Facebook page for your chance to win a virtual Boss Lady membership for 2024. Things that I always like to say as I start. Number one, if you're a returning listener, thank you so very much for continuing to support this podcast. And if you are a new listener, you'll want to stay tuned to the whole time today because we're going to talk about a fascinating subject that we have not talked about in the couple of years that we've been doing the podcast. So I think it will be something that will help us all that you'll love to hear. And if you want to find anything else about me, the only commercial I'll do, I'll give you my website, which is teresarand.com. You go there, is Teresa with no H, T-E-R-E-S-A, teresarand.com. You can find out about the work I do with companies, organizations, and individuals, and a little more about the Boss Lady community. So with that, I want to stop and introduce our guest today. Her name is Lindsay Briner, and she is a world-renowned executive coach, advisor, and neuropsychologist. So Lindsay, welcome to the Boss Lady Podcast.
Thank you, Teresa. It's great to be here with you.
We're glad to have you. And as I got your one sheet and the information, you know, there's so many topics that I want to talk about with you. But to begin with, I want to ask you to define for our guests, what exactly is a neuropsychologist?
Well, I'm a psychologist, but I was also trained as a neuroscientist as a specialization in my upper graduate degrees. So I'm trained as a researcher. I've done research in brain science and in the soft sciences of psychology. So it just means in my training as a researcher, I've done experiments and analyzed data from psychological sets of data, which is usually like self-report, and then also like EEG, brainwave data, brain stimulation, things of that nature. So I have okay. Those backgrounds. Yeah.
So you know a little bit about how our brain might work.
Yeah. brain and how it relates to behavior. The connection.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, good. How it relates to behavior. That's a great topic. So you talk about something called flow mindset. What is flow mindset?
Well, I, co- Most people are familiar with the term flow state. So flow state is something that a Western psychologist called Mikhail Csikszentmihalyi, he coined that term a long time ago. Abraham Maslow picked it up in Western psychology research. And it basically means like a peak experience of presence, having a unity in action with the task at hand. But if you think of the word state, that means temporary.
Right.
It doesn't, there's a start and a stop to it, you know, and everyone, as it's defined, anyone at any age can experience a flow state. Like my five-year-old, for example, probably experiences a flow state when he's doing his Legos, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not, it's a profound experience of presence where you kind of have a greater capacity than you thought you had. And it's a perfect balance between skill and challenge where you get catch this edge of presence and attention and focus where your narrative mind disappears and you have this sense of unity with whatever task or activity you're doing. A lot of the research that's been done on it has been with professional athletes, artists, and musicians that experience flow. But because anyone can experience it at any age, I don't necessarily think of it as like a leadership attribute. Mm-hmm. So in my research, I did a lot of research in meditation and positive psychology. And what I found from my mentors and colleagues, and then in my own research, is that from the Eastern contemplative traditions, they actually believe that this experience of a sense of inner peace, effortless ease, the narrative mind fades into the background, can be, you can experience it ongoingly. So it becomes like a flow trait. So I call my I've developed based on my research, like a brain retraining program to learn the pathway in the brain to experience a stabilized flow where it's not just temporary, but it's ongoing.
So would, and I immediately go as a former marathon runner to a runner's high,
yeah,
or how you feel when you've accomplished something that you've, you know, you're running and all of a sudden you're like, I've got this, I can finish these 26 miles. And you just feel this surge of energy and that everything's right with the world. Would that be a good example of a flow state?
Yes. Yeah. I'm a long distance runner too. So I can relate.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, people say they don't quite understand the runner's high. And I think unless you get it, you don't, but you experience it in other things. You know, I've also heard people say, I was just in the groove. I was just
in the
you
zone.
Know, everything felt right in the zone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me a little more about how that, what are the steps? I don't know if it's so simple because I don't know a lot about this, as you can take certain steps or you have to kind of rewire your pattern of thought. How do we start to go from, maybe we've never even been in a flow state or we don't recognize one. So where do we start?
Yeah. Well, when you think about the characteristics of a flow state, the primary one being there's that narrative mind is kind of gone. Like there is a narrative, but it's really about what you're actually doing, right? So
okay,
one of the main things that prevents people from getting into a flow or what throws them out of it is self-doubt. It's the inner critic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us have, I think all of us have limiting belief systems that we adopted from our early childhood conditioning that are in our subconscious and unconscious mind constantly running in the background, you know? So that's the thing that can throw you off or prevent you from experiencing a flow state. So in my work with my clients and in my groups, that's where we start. I have a lot of, the foundation of my training, as a psychologist was in limiting belief work, seeing if we can identify what's actually the background noise of our unconscious mind. Where are these limiting beliefs coming from? What's the origin of them? Where did they come from? And how do we rewire them? I call it the false self narrative, because oftentimes mm-hmm. we believe things in our unconscious mind that aren't even true. You know, that you have to achieve a certain amount of success to deserve love, you know, things of that nature. Fear of failure is kind of like a more surface level one. Yeah. And so it creates patterns of self-sabotage when we're in our career, in our relationships. So it's really about identifying like the gestalt of the false self narrative, getting just enough information for what happened at the core of these narratives, and then doing some rewiring. But then it's also about kind of out narrating that narrative with the best self, you know, like that's the false self. Then there's the best self. And there's all these exercises and positive psychology to basically give the narrative mind something more useful to do, you know, like morning and evening, having a gratitude practice, for example, and things of that nature. So really the first step to answer your question is getting really clear about, you know, what's holding you back. What's that? Being a skeptic of your own, of your own thoughts. Like when you have that self-doubt come up, question, like, where does that come from? Is that really true? Who does that belong to? Is that something I inherited? Is that something that someone told me when I was a kid? Or did this come from like a traumatizing experience? And is it really true? And what do I actually believe about myself? And then kind of the approach with them, the technical term is self-directed applied neuroplasticity. Every morning and every evening, right when you wake up or before you go to sleep, and then throughout the day, you know, kind of upload a new software program to be running, give the narrative mind something more useful to do. These are the positive affirmations that are actually real and true. So it's doing a little bit of that rewiring, pulling the limiting beliefs from the root, from the core origin of where they're coming from, getting really clear on that, and then kind of steering it into a more positive direction, your thought formations, right?
You know, while you're talking, and I know you had said you have a 5-year-old, when we were chatting before, I have a 4-year-old granddaughter, and her mother, my daughter, has her do her affirmations every morning. So I was with them last week, and I was riding in the car while we were taking her to school, and she goes, "I am loved, I am kind, I am smart." And then she rolls the window down and says, "I am a rock star."
That is so cute.
And she does it every single morning. So she was at my house yesterday, and her aunts and uncles and my mother were all here. And so I said, "Eden, tell us all your affirmations." And she just rattles them off. And I'm like, that is just so cool.
I love that.
And it's something that I think will stick with her, right?
Yeah.
That every day of her life, she says that. And I know I have an affirmation, literally, I'm looking at it, taped to my computer that I had someone have me do one time. And I read it and think about it. And, you know, sometimes when I'm feeling like I don't have what I need to keep moving or to have that next conversation, I have to remind myself that, yes, I do. But it seems, and this is a question, Lindsay, it's a constant reminder. I mean, it's not something that we easily, and let's just say I'm 62 years old, so I have a lot of reprogramming to do. I've done some of this work, but if you're 30, 40, 50, you still got a lot of those life experiences with you, even at a young age of 20 or 30. Mm-hmm. So is this something that you learn once and for all, or is it something that you always have to be working on?
Well, that's why I say, you know, it's important to, I call it precision repatterning, you know, because you don't want to, like there's a term in psychology called spiritual bypassing, or it could just be think of as psychological bypassing, right? Where if you're saying these affirmations over and over, but you're not doing the work of going, like accessing the unconscious and subconscious mind and looking into the shadow of the false self narrative, and really getting clear about the origin of where the false self narrative is coming from, then those affirmations won't work as well. And the way that I do it is we get really clear on the origin, the core wound, and then we curate the affirmations to be specific to the opposite of that experience, right? So it has to be a direct response for it to be more powerful. I'm not saying that those affirmations that you're doing or anyone else is doing don't do anything, but there's just a lot more potency when it comes with a level of precision, when you get clear about what's at the core and then do the repatterning specifically in response to that, right? You know, if like a child has an experience of, you know, this is just general, but like not being safe, you know, then
right.
I am safe, you know, like the, okay. the opposite, you know, and doing it in a really precise way to not bypass what's happening underneath the surface.
Okay, great. I like so basically you have to find the core of the problem to fix it is kind of a maybe not the right word, but to address it and to change it.
Yeah. And it's just I don't want to overemphasize that topic because I think a lot of, you know, regular therapy and like talk mm-hmm. therapy does some of that without the affirmation stuff. But I really just want to get with my clients and in my groups, like just enough information to do that precision repatterning, use those affirmations. But the program is so much more than that because then I also use meditation. You know, that's like you transcend the narrative mind completely using like non-dual awareness methods.
Right.
You know, so it's not like sometimes I think when in talk therapy and these other modalities emphasize the narrative, the story of the wound and the trauma and stuff like that can kind of reify that narrative. So I just like do enough of it to get a gist, you know, and then redirect, you know, then the meditation techniques come into play.
Okay. So when you talk about leadership, because that's one of the subjects that we briefly are is in your one sheet, you talk about leaders being sabotaged from being in the flow. So talk a little bit about if you're leading an organization, you're leading, you know, a group, how do you self-sabotage yourself?
Well, I think what I meant was that leaders unknowingly self-sabotage the work that they're doing because they have these underlying limiting beliefs that they're unaware of, right? Because they're not in a flow.
Mm. Okay. So what are some of the ways that a leader, is it any different that you address that as a leader than if you're just doing your own self-work?
I do it the same way. I think a lot of people in leadership positions, I coach mostly CEOs and founders, and they often have a lot of the same issues that they struggle with or high performers, you know? And so it's all, they have a lot of like, I need to prove myself, you know, like really addicted to this adrenaline that comes with stress because that's what motivates them, you know, fear of failure, things like that. So
do you work with groups or you work with individuals? Tell us a little bit about your specific protocol.
Yeah, I work one-on-one with clients and I also have private groups for private mm-hmm. executive teams. And occasionally I'll do a public group program if there's interest in it.
Okay. And how does that work with a group? Just a little bit of, I mean, because some of this could be very personal stuff. Is it, do you dig differently to find the root cause when you're in a group versus when you're one-on-one?
No, I teach the same techniques, but the way that I teach, because everyone who's attracted to me are generally high performers, high achiever, mm-hmm. perfectionists, you know, they're go-getters because that's people who want to be in a flow state or a stabilized flow are very motivated, you know? So the way that I teach is like, okay, I'm going to teach you these techniques and I know that you're a high performer. So you can all kind of self facilitate these techniques. And some of them are very reasonable to do in a group dynamic. And then some of them you do on your own and things like that.
So do you work with any athletes? Because I would think this would be very helpful in with athletes that really understand the flow and want to achieve that more so maybe than the average person.
Yeah, I work with a UFC champion. I've worked with an F1 racer. I've worked with very high-end professional fine artists. But the difference is really like, for professional athletes and artists and musicians, the research that's been done in the West on those groups of people is that they develop the flow state to master their one skill. You know, when they show up on the court, when they show up, you know, to do their painting, you know, but then the rest of their life is falling apart.
But not in there. Oh, wow. Thing.
Where in the East, it's like, it's about with the addition of the meditation techniques to get that unity in action with the task at hand, not only for the thing you want to be really good at, but in all times, in all situations. That's the stabilized flow. So you develop a self-mastery in all areas of your life, not just when you show up to compete, you know. And that's the same thing with business leaders, is like, you don't want to just be in a flow state when you're giving a presentation to your board or pitching to an investor. You want to be in a stabilized flow all the time so that you have good relationships with your co-founders and your colleagues and your employees. And so that you can, you know, when you're stressed out and you're running on adrenaline and cortisol and fight or flight, because you're running these limiting belief systems that you have to prove yourself to be worthy of success and be worthy of love and all these things. So you're like, have all this anxiety, then you, what happens is you regress in your ability to actually be productive because you can't focus, you're distracted, you have short-term decision-making. But when you have that, this sense of confidence, effortless ease, the inner critic has faded into the background, you're more present with the people that you work with. You can make better decisions, you can think more clearly, you can focus, you know, and you can think strategically for long-term, complex, creative problem-solving rather than just the short-term because you're stressed out. You know, it's like you're nervous. This is like rewiring the limbic system. You know, I target the stress response. Like, what brings on the stress response? What makes you triggered? What makes you reactive? What makes you anxious? And where are the themes? And how does that track back to the story of your childhood and the limiting beliefs that you bought into? And so we target specifically when the stress response comes online and how to redirect it, not just with affirmations, but with embodiment exercises, within the mind exercises, to be in awareness instead of in thought, like thinking mode versus awareness mode, the total presence versus like, I have to like prove myself, I'm going to, you know, so it's
wait, and I'm,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I just talked a lot. Go ahead.
I my mind, I'm thinking a lot while you're saying all of this, because I would think if you get into that stabilized flow, not only as a leader, but as a partner or a friend or a parent, the benefits, as I listen to you talk, you know, having been a CEO and been a marathon runner and done those things, but I also think about if I'm constantly running on this hamster wheel all day long, when I get home, I don't just turn that off. So if I can work on stabilizing all of that, it would have to be beneficial to every aspect of my life, not just my work or my athletic, whatever, if that's the case.
Yeah. It's getting out of the stress response, right? And like, motivation is what runs the axiom of your stress response. Like, what are you motivated by? And that's what, when I work with these leaders, these CEOs, it's like, they're driven, they're motivated, productive. And it's for a reason, often because they were abandoned or neglected as a child and they have to prove themselves to get attention and things like this, you know? So it's about rewiring what's motivating you to get out of the stress response. And it's like a survival pattern. We adopt these limiting beliefs because of things that happen to us, or we inherit them from our pattern, from our parents, right? So it's a survival pattern. It's the fight or flight response. And it's like the algorithm that's running all of our choice making and decision making as we move through life. So then it becomes a question of like, okay, when you're not in your survival pattern, who are you?
You know,
it's like a fundamental identity shift. Like, what actually, like, if, when you're not running your survival pattern, what are you? What is the nervous system doing? You're just present, you know? And what happens when you're just present? You know, then the true self comes online. A real authenticity becomes discovered.
You know? Right.
And often we feel more connected to the people around us. And then that's where a new algorithm of motivation starts to come online because our heart is more open. We're not judging ourselves through the lens of the inner critic, and we're judging other people less. So we have more compassion. So we feel more connected. We feel more empathetic. And then we just want to do good and be connected. Right. And that's what starts to motivate us in a different way. And we can actually be more productive because we're more at ease in a way that's protective of our nervous system instead of draining it, right?
So what about if someone's listening and they're thinking, you know, I had a really great childhood. I don't have limiting beliefs from my childhood. I guess my question is, even though maybe we had a really good childhood, society might have given us some limiting beliefs. And thinking about being a female or being anyone in a marginalized society or even being a male that's expected to do bigger, greater thing. However you want to put that, I don't think it affects just any one gender or race. But even if you had a good childhood, I guess my question is, we still get to adulthood with some limiting beliefs, right?
Yeah.
Would that be a true statement?
Yeah, I have clients who had good, you know, childhoods with no like major traumatic experiences, but there's little things that create when an underdeveloped brain just tries to make sense of reality, right? So even like really subtle experiences that maybe weren't traumatic, but kind of created a moment of confusion, and then the underdeveloped brain tries to explain when they don't actually have the capacity to, and that's when the limiting beliefs come online. So we go into, you know, I'm trained in hypnotherapy and different modalities to get into the subconscious mind, and there's always limiting beliefs there. I have yet to find someone who does not have any.
That's really what I was getting to, Lindsay. I think
like with your question about the societal and cultural belief systems, right?
Yeah.
We all have some limiting beliefs, and they're unique, but there's some that are universal. But then they get reinforced by societal limiting beliefs, right? Like I have one client who had a great childhood, but his mom was a military mom and she was a single mom. And so though it was like a great childhood, she worked really, really hard.
Yeah.
Worked hard for her kids. And she did her best. And he has, you know, these memories of her coming home just exhausted, you know, and missing her. And it was like, Mom, like, why do you have to work so hard? And she was like, because I have to work hard to take good care of you. And so it was like, okay, I have to work hard and suffer to be successful.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a cultural belief system too, is like work harder to achieve more, hustle, hustle, hustle.
Yeah. You know?
And it's not necessarily true. We can be at peace and at ease and still accomplish probably even more. It doesn't have to be painful.
You know, right.
You don't have to kill yourself.
It makes sense.
You know?
It just makes so much sense. If we're not always in a stress, flight, or fight mode, we can accomplish more because we're not so distracted. We're not so concerned. We don't have all these, I call them the voices in our head going on.
Yeah.
You know, we know we're capable, but it takes work. I love what you said, and I wrote it down, be a skeptic of your own thoughts, really taking the time. And we don't have time in a 30-minute show to go through all of it, but it's fascinating to me because it is something that I know as I was younger coming up, we heard you got to work hard. You got to, you know, that's what it's all about. Work, work, work to make it all come together and to be successful. So I love that it seems we're talking more about this than we were in my early years.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking a lot more about these type of things. And I think that's incredibly important for this generation and the next generation for the work that you're doing. So Lindsay, where would we find you? How do we find you if we want to know more information about what you do?
Yeah, my website is just my name, Lindsay with an A, LINDSAY, Briner.com, BRINER.
Okay, great. I will put all of that in the show notes. This could easily be 3 or 4 episodes, so I may have to have you back. And I have a women's community that we get together and do different virtual education series, so we may be chatting some more, because I think this is something, it's work that we all need to pay attention to, because it would be so beneficial, not just to us, but like I said, to the people around us, our family, our friends, yes, the people we work with. But what I love about the work you're doing is it can't just impact one area.
Yeah.
It's going to impact everything you do, and every person that you come in contact with, I think, will feel that there's something different about this person.
Yeah.
When they just don't believe all those voices in their head.
Yeah. Like Dana, you know, example of self-love, right? When we get to the inner critic, we can fill ourselves up from within and then model that without even talking, saying I love myself to someone. Like, just model it, because that inner critic is off, you know, and you get to just experience being in the field of someone who's loving themselves. It has just an invisible domino effect of positive impact, you know?
I love that. I love that. Well, thank you so much for being here. Lots of great information. And again, this Be a Skeptic of Your Own Thoughts. I think that might be the title of the podcast.
Oh, nice. I love that.
But I love that quote, and I'm sure I will use that again. Good. So thank you for being here. And listeners, thank you for listening. Again, it's Lindsay with an A, Lindsay Briner, Briner, world-renowned executive coach, advisor, and neuropsychologist. Has very important work that would benefit any of us. So look her up, find her, and connect. So Lindsay, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Teresa.
And I will end the podcast like I always do, which always, it's amazing how it so often seems very appropriate, with the saying my grandfather always told us when he was alive and we were growing up. He always said, take time to stop and smell the roses. So until we meet again, take care.